This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. I'm Dave Brown, joined by Megan Gilmore and Michelle McQuigg for our news panel. Let's have a look at another topic. Three independent schools are turning to the courts after they allege the Ontario government improperly excluded them and other similar institutions from COVID-19 funding. The Safe Return to Class Fund was announced last summer as part of various pandemic supports provided by the federal government. The schools allege the funding was withheld for no justifiable reason, given that the independent schools have been subject to the same health restrictions and closures as publicly funded ones. What is an independent school, you ask? Great question. Independent schools are self-funded organizations operating under their own board of trustees outside of the province's district boards of education. In Ontario, most independent schools are either faith-based or specialized, like a Montessori school. Megan, you want us to discuss this. Why?
Different elements of a government pandemic relief. And often in terms of businesses, what should businesses receive? How should they use the money? This story is a case of the government, the provincial government, deciding who gets funds that are strictly for safety measures. So things like ventilation, things like being able to reconfigure your classrooms, supports for students with mental health needs, with different disabilities, meals for students who would typically rely on a in-school meal program but are now teaching, are now learning remotely. So how do we provide for them? And I just find this a really interesting snapshot of different conversations about the role of the government in education of students, particularly children. And what does that mean in terms of a pandemic when there's now relief funds involved?
Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting topic, Megan, and you put one question to us in the email thread sort of saying, what's your general reaction to this? Mm-hmm. And it's a really tricky one because a lot of these schools by design have chosen to go off the grid, right? That they don't want to be held to certain regional or provincial standards because they want to do their own thing and they are self-funded. So if you're self-funded, does that not mean if you're off the grid, you should therefore have to self-fund your own COVID measures? That said, what sort of is and what should happen are different because we're talking about the safety of Ontarians here. We're talking about a lot of government funding that came from the federal government through the provinces that was meant to protect people. So from an ethical standpoint, should you have to protect all students? And the answer to that one is obviously yes, whether or not their parents want them off the grid or not. But Michelle, when we're talking about general reactions, what do you make of the story?
I'm kind of with you, Dave. I've really vacillated on this. But when I first saw the press release and actually forwarded it on to the Ontario team that wound up covering it for Canadian Press, My initial reaction was, well, that's kind of bonkers. And then you read the final product that my friend Paolo Lorigio produced, and you hear the government's argument saying that these are schools who are not governed or not regulated by the Ministry of Education. They're not covered by the boards. Yes, they probably have to follow the provincial curriculum to some degree in order to award credits and
matriculations.
And
matriculations, yeah, and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah. But there is some leeway there as well in terms of what can be taught and whatnot. So when you hear that argument and you look at it from a technical perspective, they probably have a pretty strong case if this legal challenge does indeed move forward. But we're not talking about an insignificant number of students here. And I'm thinking about it all in the context of the pandemic, which is something that I'm sure schools and boards both were not planning on or factoring in when they decided whether or not to go it alone or to be part of a broader system. We're talking about about 150,000 kids is what was estimated by the three schools that are leading this challenge. That's a lot of kids and a lot of corollary exposures from parents and community activities and whatnot. And while people think about privately funded schools as catering to the elite, and certainly that can be true in some cases, some of them are not, and some of them are addressing mm-hmm. some needs of the more vulnerable student population that are already being left behind. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of the same complex reactions as you, Dave, and I'm wondering if perhaps it might, in hindsight, perhaps the government might have wanted to circle back and inquire if they felt they needed the funding. Some, I'm sure, might have declined and said, we're fine, we've got a state-of-the-art facility, we're good, thanks very much. But the government did, in fact, act within its discretion. When the federal government allocated money for the provinces to hand out to schools, the provinces did have full say over where it could go. So it is a really tricky one, and you can understand both sides. But at the end of the day, I think I would probably come down on saying that a pandemic is a bit of a special circumstance that calls for a special response of yeah. some kind.
Michelle, I'm glad you mentioned sort of private schools in there. And there's a reason why I defined this off the top, because not all private schools are independent schools. An independent school really is a school that is outside of any provincial funding framework. There are still mm-hmm. a lot of private schools that do take provincial funding and are part of the school board framework. I just want to make yes. sure, as we're like talking about this to the listeners, that we're not like blurring these lines, that we're not talking about necessarily just elite private schools, as you mentioned, not
exactly,
just elite private
yeah.
schools that might be familiar by name to several people, but these are truly sort of off-the-grid schools. Megan, we touched upon a sort of related-ish question in a panel many, many months ago, but I'm going to kind of reframe it into this context, because we're talking about the difference between funding of education versus COVID-19 mm-hmm. funding, and the case that these schools are making is that the government mandated that we had to shut down because of general public health orders. This wasn't a Ministry of Education order. It was a Government of Ontario order. So we start asking these questions about what's the responsibility of a government, what's the responsibility in funding to a province when they're shutting down legal businesses. And we talked about that in the context of gyms many, many months ago. But if the government is going to shut you down, what is the government's responsibility to help you transition?
Right. You'd think if the government's forcing you to do this, that they would be giving you supports to do that. And I can see the arguments on both sides, and even bringing this back into our discussion about how we set uniform standards. So who was consulted when you made your standard uniform? When the government of Ontario thinks about the students of the province and the students that they are responsible to, who do they imagine fall into that group? And you can surmise by this case that right now, it doesn't look like the government of Ontario thinks that it's responsible in this matter for students at independent schools. But they are the ones who made that emergency order, that a state of emergency, and they're the ones who told the schools to close. So you would think that it would then follow if you're going to help businesses, you're going to help schools. But it doesn't always work the way. And like these loopholes in independent education happen in all sorts of things. So for myself, I went to a privately funded Protestant Christian school from junior JK to grade 12, different schools for that time. And it was difficult for my family to access certain special education supports because I was not in a public school board. And yes. so the reason why I got things that I needed is because teachers at W. Ross McDonald School for the Blind, which was in the same city as I was, took one of their days off to come and sit with me in class and figure out a plan. So these gaps, these are actually really very real gaps that some students face all the time, depending on which school their parents have chosen to enroll them in. And the pandemics are just kind of highlighted it in a unique way.
Michelle, I heard you affirming a couple times during that answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you can gather, I agree with everything Megan said. Those gaps do and definitely exist. I can vouch for it on a different level. I had a limited period of exposure to the private school system. And similarly, we had to find outside supports to get Braille course material and whatnot. So that was a full credit to my parents on that one. I was too young to play much of an advocacy role at this point. But those gaps definitely do exist. And I think there's something to be said about the way the government messaging was handled throughout all this. So if you listen back to a lot of the education announcements, they talked a lot about, you know, protecting every student, framing it in terms of universal relief and support for schools and whatnot. And clearly that wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. And clearly the government's exercising a right that probably will be upheld to pursue things the way they did. But then that raises questions about expectations and framing, especially in such an unusual and unforeseeable circumstance like a pandemic. So I think there needs to be some broader acknowledgement of the fact that this is not, in fact, a uniform system. The public doesn't always necessarily know this because the government doesn't present it as such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sort of as a wrapping up here, because I think Megan rightly identifies there is an inclusion side to this conversation. There's definitely a disability side to this conversation because there are only three schools that decided to go forward with this lawsuit, but there are a number of different kinds of institution, and some are specialized education systems for persons with disabilities. So although we've got sort of a limited number of students who were affected inside within this lawsuit, from a more general point of view, there certainly are some students with disabilities who probably found themselves on the wrong side of this. Although, by the way, students with disabilities also found themselves underfunded and under-resourced inside public boards as well. As my sister wrote a letter, an open letter in the Ottawa Citizen that detailed just that issue and what teachers were going through. But Megan, as we're sort of wrapping up this conversation and wrapping up our thoughts here, what are some of your concerns sort of outside these three institutions that are inside this lawsuit for other students who may have been affected by this lack of funding and lack of attention?
Sure. My concerns would be just in general that, as Michelle was saying, that people don't understand how many different education options are available for parents, and that there are students who are not receiving the services that they require simply because of a decision that their parents made. And their parents may have made, there's many reasons why parents choose the schools that they choose for their children. And sometimes, in some cases, the reason why parents choose the particular schools for their children is because they believe that the public system is not serving their children well. So they would say, the public system has failed my child, so I have to send them somewhere else. That might not have been my first choice, but now it's the option that you've given me because you didn't do what I needed you to do, and now you're not going to help them. So I think it brings up the need to have a much more open, honest conversation about what is actually happening in public schools, who's getting served and who's not getting served. And it does actually boil down to a fundamental question of who gets to decide how children are taught? Mm. Is that the government's responsibility, or is that the parent's responsibility, the guardian's responsibility?
I just want to point out one thing here as we're wrapping up this conversation, though, that to say that independent schools who did not serve the needs of students with disabilities, somehow that's somebody else's fault. Like, there are going to be listeners listening to the show who are saying, why aren't independent schools held to that standard as well, right? That, like, like you as a school have a responsibility to say, I'm going to serve students with disabilities.
Totally, 100%.
If I'm off the grid, but I'm still accountable to students with disabilities.
And right, they are still accountable.
And these are galvanizing, super sensitive issues. What people might recall when John Tory, the current mayor of Toronto, tried to run for premier of Ontario, that campaign was sunk on the issue of funding for Catholic schools, which are still publicly funded. So if you venture even further into the weeds of the education system, this is a really thorny topic that a lot of governments are not going to want to touch. Mm-hmm. So the likelihood of seeing it addressed, I'd say, is limited.
Well, maybe we can wait on this a little bit further, but we need to go for now. But Megan, this was a super interesting topic. Thank you for bringing it to us. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.